Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the program, Lincoln on Lending. This is David Lincoln, Mortgage Banking Solutions, and we're thrilled to bring you this program. There's a lot that's happened, and we apologize. Last week we had Labor Day, and so obviously there wasn't a program. Not a lot of you were at your computers or at your wanting to dial and listen, so the program had gotten moved to this fine day. And boy, in that two-week period, there's been a lot happening. Let's get right into it. There is a lot happening in the world of interest rates, and as we do every program, we start off and dive right into it. Our regular guest, Joe Farr, is with us with MBS Quoteline. Joe, good to have you on the program. Let's dive into interest rates. What's happening out there? Give us an update that happened the last couple of weeks.
It's been a pretty good 2 weeks. The mortgage-backed security prices have improved. Rates have fallen each of the last 2 weeks, and really we're back to where the mortgage rates are about as low as they were back in late May when we started a pretty significant rise. So we've recovered quite nicely. Very low rates given.
Thrilled to hear that.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you what. You know, a lot of people, I get a lot of questions. What's driven that down? I know the answer. We talked about it before, but for the sake of our listeners, what has been the factors that have allowed interest rates to climb back down?
Over the last 2 weeks, it's been a couple things. The week ending September 4th was a week that the stock market really saw a bit of a retracement. The Dow lost 250 points during that week, and the attitude seemed to be a little less bullish or more bearish, whichever way you want to look at it. But the stock market gave back a little bit, and as investors were getting out of stocks, they were getting into things like mortgage-backed securities. So we saw a nice little improvement in prices that week, and rates fell. And then the other thing that's so important to us this week or last week and going forward is how well the Treasury auctions are received. Last week, the Treasury auctioned off, what were they, 3 and 10 and 30-year notes, and the 3 was well received. The 10 was sort of average, but the 30-year auction was very well received and had a bid-to-cover ratio of just about 3-1. Very strong foreign participation, and that kind of attitude toward longer-term fixed-rate assets boded well for MBS prices,
yeah.
And so we saw a nice little increase in prices there and a reduction in rates. So, two pretty good weeks, not big movements, but rates are sliding lower.
Going in the right direction, Joe.
Absolutely.
Keep it up. We're giving you all the credit on
all right.
On the lower rates.
Don't blame me when it goes the other way.
I'll take all the credit when it slides. But don't blame me if it goes back up. There's been one big factor in this. The Feds have been consistently borrowing, and there's been some discussions in the internet and the blogs as to the future of the Feds continuing to stay in as buyers. They had talked about doing $1.25 trillion. And would you give us our listeners a quick report of what you're hearing out there and the kind of the cause and effect of it going either way, Joe?
Well, the Fed has been an investor, a buyer of almost $800 billion so far, and for the year they expect to be a buyer of $1.25 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities. Fannie Mae, Ginnie Mae, Freddie Mac issued mortgage-backed securities. that represents almost 65%. If they buy the full $1.25 trillion, and if the MBA's estimates for originations in the third and fourth quarter are close, they will have purchased about 65% of the amount of total originations. That is a huge participation in the origination side of this industry. And anyone that's been that big a part of the market,
yeah,
if they were to change how they participate in that market, you have to anticipate it would affect mortgage rates.
Absolutely.
The Fed has currently said that by the end of the year we will have purchased $1.25 trillion. They seem to be right on the path to do that. But the market's got to find out what they're going to do after that. If they,
yep,
if they were to say, you know, that's it, you know, you've now got a void in the market where there has been somebody that's buying 65% of everything made. Who's going to buy it?
Yeah, who's going to be there? And I mean, there's strong indication that the Chinese want to continue to be active buyers and come in, and there's a lot to be determined yet. And so if the Feds are not there, we can anticipate interest rates potentially rising, the risk that there are not enough other buyers out there. And at least that's what it seems like, what I'm reading and sensing as well. Would you concur?
Oh, no question. The with that big a buyer leaving the market, it's going to force rates to go higher to attract new buyers. Now, one of the things that we need to look forward to is some indication from the Fed that they, in fact, are going to do just that. They're going to spend their full $1.25 trillion by the end of the year, and then they're done. You know, there is not a very strong consensus out there that is, in fact, what they're going to do. There are some people who think that they might need to continue. You know, if they discontinue purchasing MBSs and rates go up, it could put a chill in the new home purchases, existing home purchases, as those people are needing affordable money to buy homes. And then there are some people who think that they might stop early, that the economic recovery is moving along nicely. And if that were to happen, Dave, you can anticipate that rates would shoot higher pretty quickly.
And I think it's on the confidence, Joe, that there's enough buyers in the market. But I tell you, that's a real risk. And this administration has a big issue that they could face on squelching a recovery that seems to be forming, at least in housing. We're seeing a significant, you know, real empirical data suggesting that housing is forming a bottom and starting its potential climb up. And there'd be nothing that could have a greater jeopardy to that than them exiting the program. So for those of you that have a direct line to the Feds, pick it up and call them. Tell them to stay in the program. We've got more on this topic, and we've got another hot one we're going to get into the topic. It has to do with the MBA's discussion about the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We're going to talk about that. But as we wrap up this segment, Joe, is there what's on the calendar this week? I think you said there's a lot out there this week.
Yeah, there really is. With the economy seeming to sort of be at a bottom and starting to turn around, inflationary information is going to become more and more important to investors and the yields that they're willing to accept on long-term fixed-rate assets. And this week we have inflation data from August for PPI and CPI. The measures, as we've talked about in the past, there are core measures and there are full measures of inflation. The core measures are expected to be very tame for both CPI and PPI. We did see a little jump up in the cost of oil in the month of August, and that is the market's expecting that CPI, full CPI and full PPI will show a bit of a jump higher, but most of that gets discounted in that core is the better long-term measure of what inflation is. In addition to the inflation reports, we have retail sales coming out on Tuesday, and retail sales is always a very strong measure of economic activity.
Yep, it is.
Industrial production comes out Wednesday, Thursday, housing starts, and again, Thursday, there's another announcement of how much the Fed's going to be auctioning off in the 2, 5, and 7-year term notes for the following week. So, you know, a lot to absorb, and any one of those days could be fairly volatile if the information that's released and announced is very different than what's been expected.
Well, Joe, we always thank you so much for being a part of the program and bringing this fresh perspective of what's going on. This could be a busy week, Joe.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Lickin' on Lending. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back here. You know what? It's so much fun doing this. You realize just how much you respect the professionals that are doing that. But we do have a professional producer. Andy Alvey, I want to say a special thank you to our producer, advisor, everything else that makes this. He does these spots that you're listening to. Special thank you goes out to him. He helps kind of lift the program up into something closer to a regular professionally produced broadcast. But it's good to have that input and that topic. We're here. Why are we here? We're here to bring current relevant information that's going on in the markets to you, in the mortgage industry. And consumers that are listening in, thank you so much for tuning in. It helps you as you're looking to make a decision to finance a new home or a refinance. There's a lot of information here that will be beneficial for you as you sit down to talk to your loan officers. Loan officers and those involved in the production side of the business, although business owners, get this program sent around the industry and get people dialing in. It'll be a great resource for your sales staff, for your processing operational staff, as you look at the issues. And there is not a bigger issue than what's going on in the legislative side. And we have got the best person in the planet to digest and bring complex issues into a focus for those of us that just kind of just want to not have to read 600 pages of a new bill. And we've got Alice Alvey. Welcome back, Alice. So good to have you on the program. Thank you. What is going on in the world with the legislative update here?
Oh, well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'll tell you what, it's a bit of a challenge. I've got spreadsheets, you know, and yes, you guys don't have to worry about reading the 600 pages. We'll do that for you and then just listen every week and take very detailed notes. So, well, our quick update to start with is that thank goodness Congress hasn't had a chance to focus on us too much as they've been back for the last week or so. And so we're just watching to see. There's certainly a lot of discussion out there about the Consumer Financial Protection Agency and the idea of, you know, does our industry need a different entity to look out for the consumer interests versus, you know, the current multiple layers of regulators that are out there right now. So all I can do for right now is give you a heads up that watch that this is not going to go away easily. It is something that is getting a lot of discussion. As a quick summary and a little refresher, we are still, everything else is on hold. We haven't seen any activity. I'm trying to get any kind of moratorium on the Home Valuation Code of Conduct. The FHA Act and trying to get more resources put towards FHA, the Mortgage Bankers Association did issue a call to action. So those of you who are members of their Mortgage Action Alliance, you probably got an email on that. Check that one out. Make sure you respond to it because that's certainly something we want the Federal Housing Administration to get some attention and give them the resources to keep this product under control. So that's House Bill 3146 for us on the residential side. And then HUD did issue another FAQ for the RESPA. I think this is our third one now, maybe fourth. I'm losing track. So it sounds like, or it seems like, we're just going to have a heads up and just watch. Every couple weeks, they're going to add or change and add FAQs. So
I think it's, you know, we have the soap opera programs out there, and this one's going to be known as the legislative stomach or the mortgage banker's stomach
right.
turns.
As my stomach turns, yeah, right.
We may have a new segment of this, as the legislative stomach turns. Or anyway, there is a lot going on, Alice, and I think there is a lot of opportunity for people to need training on this thing and just to stay on top of this. So we're doing it for you by digesting this. When we tease about the 600-page bill, that's just one issue that's
yeah.
going on out there. Quick update on the Reg Z that's in the rule period. That's what you were just talking about, the questions, the answers. I want to stir everyone up. Get this radio program circulated around to everyone you're listening to. We've got a number of our clients that are doing this, that are passing this around, and then getting on the phone. If you don't think your voice matters, all I'd say is point you to the health care bill that's being that appears to be in jeopardy as a result of the quote-unquote Tea Parties going on across the country. If you don't think your voice matters, I could not disagree with you more. It is time to get in and start making comments. But here's the most important part, and Alice has been saying this in every one of our programs. If you just call and say, this is terrible, this is not good, this will hurt my business, you are not providing them the meaningful content and data that is so critical. Alice, give them a few pointers. And when they're calling in, they need to be specific, do they not?
Absolutely. And, you know, the one that Jay's talking about now is the Reg Z proposed rule. They call it Home Secure Credit. We have till December 24th. Comments must be received by then. Last show, August 31st, is when we talked in detail about that. We'll certainly talk more about it. But if you want to go back and listen to a particular show, that's when we really hashed this out about how is the fact that yield spread premium in particular is a benefit to a customer in some ways. A lot of entities don't understand how pricing works and how that their, you know, the added income coming in from a lender or, I'm sorry, from a broker, and how that may be benefiting the borrower in the interest rate or the cost being applied. They really don't understand pricing. They just simply think yield spread premium is a bad thing. And I would disagree when it's used properly in a loan. Joe, I know you could certainly attest to that as well. So that's what we mean by having factual ways on ways that benefit customers within the loan process.
Well, there's so much, and we want to get into this. What we're trying to do in the pace of the program, folks, is we're trying to move through quickly through a lot of these issues on the first half hour, get through a lot of these topics, and then move into the more relaxed discussion on a lot of this stuff. Alice, is there any more that you want to add to this segment before we move into some of the hot topics? And, boy, we got some good ones to talk about again today.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody remembers October 1st, so just a couple of weeks away, we have several sections of the Truth in Lending Act that go into effect. So we just got ourselves settled down on the Mortgage Industry Improvement Act. I'm sorry, Mortgage Disclosure Improvement Act. Boy, it's hard to get that one straight because I keep forgetting the word I stands for improvement. So that we just got used to. So October 1st, you have that the definition of an application is changing, and this is tighter. So you have to be very careful that you're not living in our old world of what could be a pre-qualification, that is flipping to now. Many of those things that we used to call a pre-qual will absolutely now be called an application. So make sure you know how to draw that bright line to get your disclosures out on time. We have our new high-priced mortgage loan definition goes into effect that day. Officially, appraisal coercion becomes a federal violation and prohibited under TILA, and you've got new advertising rules. So lots going into effect on October 1st.
TILA, you know, that sounds like a great alcohol, you know, like a great drink you have after five, but it's actually Truth
one, right?
in Lending. And so, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
We, based on what we have coming down, let's take a quick break for a word from a word of our sponsors right after this message. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Thank you so much for staying tuned. Again, I want to encourage you to send the link around to the Blog Talk Radio to all your friends. Get them involved listening to this program. Thank you for being a part of the program. If you want to email me your questions, that would be great. Email them to D as in David, L-Y-K-K-E-N, at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. We'll get those and get those on the air. Also, we've got Twitter. You can David Lickin, D David and L-Y-K-K-E-N on Twitter. You can shoot me some quick comments. I love it that way. We also welcome posts. We'll be having blogs up and running here that we'll be able to comment to. So get your information to us. We will get it posted, and we'll bring the questions forward on the question to our panel of experts here. There is something going on that was proposed in the industry recently, and we're going to toss this into Joe's lap to start off the discussion. It has to do with MBAs, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, recommendations or proposals to the Obama administration, Joe, about the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and what we should be doing about it. Would you introduce this topic for us, please?
Yeah, I'd love to, Dave. For a long time now, ever since we're right at the anniversary of the Fed putting Fannie and Freddie in conservatorship, there's been a question of what's going to happen to those entities and the position they have in the home financing industry. And it kind of has not been something that could be addressed. They're so vital, and they've been so important to maintaining the housing market that it's been kind of put on the back burner because effectively it's working. But everyone knows that something's got to happen, and the MBA has just recently put forth sort of the first proposal. What they are proposing is that Fannie and Freddie's entities go away. Their assets would become assets of a bad bank and get disposed of in whatever way works the best. But essentially those assets, the balance sheet assets, would go somewhere else. But what they propose is entities, and they've styled the name as mortgage credit guarantor entities. Maybe one, two, five, not real specific as to how many, but these entities would serve in pretty much the same capacity as what Fannie and Freddie and Ginnie Mae do now. And that is that they would be the entities that would set consistency standards, would basically define what a core loan is, would create underwriting and documentation requirements and guidelines, would use standard legal instruments, much the same as what Fannie and Freddie do today. And these entities would be the entities that would issue mortgage-backed securities. Again, very much the same as what's issued today.
So it's a very much of a similar program. So when I first heard this proposal, I'll be honest with you, I was deeply concerned about this being a something that was not going to be good in the best interest. And I was a little surprised that the MBA came out with this position. That was my first response. And then I started reading into it and looking at the responses and the initial feedback coming out of those within the industry that I have a lot of respect for. And it looks like there's some merit to it. And, Joe, if I understood you correctly in our pre-program broadcast, that you actually see some benefits for this. So let's talk about, you know, what are the benefits? We keep the securitization market, sounds like, alive and healthy. In fact, that we're getting flushing out, the bad assets are going to the quote-unquote the big bad bank out there, yeah, wherever, whoever that is and however that's going to exist. That's a whole other discussion. But get into what you see as positive about it, and I want to see it from the other side.
Yeah, the positives are basically three things. One is that there is efficiency in the industry, and that passes through to consumers in the form of how much they have to pay to get a mortgage. There's consistency in the industry that's created by standard underwriting guidelines and documentation. And this would maintain, this would be a benefit of having these mortgage credit guarantor entities. They would be private entities, but they'd be regulated by a strong regulator, as they say, which would be a governmental regulator. So the consistency of the documentation and the procedures and the process. The other thing that it continues is the mortgage-backed security structure of owning mortgage loans. And what that does for us, Dave, is that it introduces buyers that can, you know, they're not just buying individual loans, they're buying loans that are of a certain structure, certain documentation, and fall into certain underwriting, understood underwriting guidelines. But they can, you know, it's buying a lot at one time. And then the third thing that it allows is that there would be not only these entities that would guarantor the performance of those mortgage-backed securities, but also the federal government would be a backstop, much like it is with Ginnie Mae and much like it's always been perceived of being with Fannie and Freddie. It would give the investors from around the world an opportunity to safely and securely invest their money in U.S. mortgage-backed securities, which is going to have the impact of keeping rates lower, or certainly rates will be lower than they would be without that guarantee.
Yep. Well, Joe, isn't the argument, we're getting some comments in right now as you're talking, that says, isn't the GSEs already doing this? And what is the difference? One point that came in I thought was very good. It came actually from my business partner, Andy Schell, just wrote in. And he says, you know, the good part of this thing is it could actually drop the guarantee fees if you got those bad assets out. That's really a good point.
That is a good point. And yeah, they are doing it, but the entities, and they're doing it because it's still the most efficient process for mortgage home ownership and mortgage lending in the world. The agencies and their guidelines and the MBS structure and the guarantors are what have allowed Americans to enjoy very low mortgage rates and very affordable home financing.
Hey, Dave, this is Alice. Can I jump in with a question?
Oh, please.
Yeah, I just, you know, so Joe, just to help me understand this, so they're going to retain the structure, but maybe the piece that seems to be different is there are going to be product limits then. So it'll be limiting where the investments can go, and, you know, it'll be your standard 30-year fixed rate basic ARM products.
Right. I think there'll be a little more oversight on the type of products, but much of the difficulties that Fannie and Freddie had to do with their investment portfolios and their decision to invest in products that they couldn't have put into mortgage-backed securities, all the subprime loans that they invested in, and the growth of their balance sheet. And what's proposed is that these entities wouldn't be investors from that perspective. They'd just be guarantors. That's a big difference.
So as a private label, they would have shareholders, but then still backed by the government.
Well, not so much backed by the government, but the government would represent a second degree of backstop for the investors of the mortgages. So it wouldn't be these entities would be guaranteed or would be covered by the federal government, but the investors of the mortgage-backed securities would.
But, Joe, what if we just took the bad assets out of Fannie and Freddie and took them out of them and let them continue to operate? Why set up something new? Why do a new thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. And what's proposed is that these entities would be, you know, smaller, not too big to fail kind of entities. There might be 2 to 5 to create improved competition among the entities. But also what's anticipated is that the people and the processes of Fannie and Freddie would wind up manning one or more of these new structures. So good question. Other than the legal entities maybe need to be done away with.
Well, I think one argument, someone just wrote in a comment that said, well, you know what, these things need to be gutted, and how do you ever get, you know, a downsize, something the size of Fannie and Freddie, the size they've grown to? It reminds me of the one story that the way they solved an HR problem, they had this one individual, this one bank, I'll elaborate the story because it kind of gets to the point, is they had this one person in this one department that they didn't particularly care for, but he was so senior, so what they did is they transferred the whole department to another place, and then one by one they transferred people back out of that into another function, leaving the guy alone basically. And so I kind of wonder if this isn't a little bit of the plan of the federal government, is let's just transfer the whole doggone thing into a bad asset program, and then one by one bring the people out and back into this new entity. Is there some of that going on here, do you think?
Again, there's some very, very strong reasons to maintain that. One is that the mortgage, the home financing part of our economy functions pretty well right now. And I know that's you know, saying things that we all know didn't work too well in the past, but the core lending and the Fannie, Freddie, Jenny type lending is functioning pretty well right now.
And the function wasn't the problem. It was the risk that we put within the function.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good point. You know, the old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, the thing broke, and so a lot of people are saying the thing's got to get fixed. But one of the things I listen to, if anyone who listens to Glenn Beck and, you know, which side you're on, conservative or liberal, whichever side, but I tell you, he has the 9/12 program on Saturday. There was rallies across the country, and what his focus is right now is we need to get the corruption out. There was a lot of corruption in the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac programs and how they were administered from the top. And if we could get the corruption out, you know, it is possible that we could do something. The reality is they have become such huge, bloated, I hate to use the word beast, but organization that it may be necessary. And I think that what it sounds like might be somewhat behind the MBA's motive on this. I'm really dubious about their recommendation, but again, people like you, Joe, who I respect tremendously, and many others out there coming in saying, you know what, the more we look at this, we think this may be good.
Well, I know Freddie used to always say that mortgage rates would be 50 basis points higher if it weren't for them and this structure. And I think that might be too low. I think that the benefit that consumers, borrowers realize from having the structure that we have is greater than that.
And I would say to consumers, there's a little bit of a feeling of safety in the idea that the product itself, so not just price, you know, to your point, sure, price is a big part of how this is a benefit, but it's such a benefit to consumers to know that there's an entity out there that when investors invest, that it's creating a place for good loans. You know, for the good, stable product that I want, that I understand.
Well, I think the suggestion just came in from someone else saying, could you bring someone from the MBA on and defend it? Because we, too, have our suspicions that, you know, this is not good. We don't, you know, the old saying is don't fix what's not broken. Well, obviously, there's some things broken about the system, but, you know, it really scares a lot of our listeners that we're going to do away with sound, proven, you know, if you look over the long life of Fannie and Freddie, they've been tremendous to add to liquidity. I mean, it went awry in this last business cycle because of the additional risk that came that they bought and brought into the market. So I think there's a lot to this discussion, and so we're going to try to get someone from the MBA to come on in a future program about this, because this is a topic, again, there's so many developing topics. This is one that we really need to follow and track, because I think it is starting to get some traction within the MBA. It's what I'm hearing from some tweets that are coming in from fairly significant people that are the inside.
And, David, it's just the first proposal. MBA put it out, and I applaud them for coming out with something that they think will be a very workable solution. And you know, I come from the position that Fannie and Freddie maybe aren't going to survive. They're in conservatorship, and you got to do something with them somehow, sometime. And so,
good point.
This is a very good way to continue all the great things that they brought to the table without that disruption.
If in fact the inevitability is that they're going away, yes, absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, you kind of have a tendency to want to hang on in times like this to known things and that which is familiar to you. And I think many in the industry are wanting to hold on to Fannie and Freddie. It's almost like this may be a bad example, but it's almost like an abusive spouse. I mean, I'm being beaten up by them, but you know what? The spouse I know is better than the other one I don't know. Yeah. So there's a little bit of that going on here, and there's so much. We're going to continue this discussion. We have much more to talk about. There's some things going on in regulation. We're going to go in and take a quick break, and so stay tuned to Lickin' on Lending. We'll be right back.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Well, we kind of gave you, Joe, a little extra coverage there for you covering this.
That's right.
We ran your spot there again. I was just talking to to Andy, our producer. He says, oh, sorry about that. We ran it, but that's to Joe. But he's doing a lot to bring this forward. And so, anyway, we value your input on this. And I think this is a topic, Joe, that we'd like to request, and many of our listeners are going, we would love to have you continue this, but we know there's a lot going on also with developments related to the FAQs, the frequently asked questions, and the RESPA. And, Alice, we really need to kind of get over and talk a little bit about that. There's some things there that are, quite frankly, just too interesting. And is it true that one of the proposals is that if a broker issues a GFE, a good faith estimate, and the borrower and the lender, the wholesale lender, accepts it, they're bound by the terms of that GFE? Could you get into a little bit about that? There's a lot of implications as a result of this.
Well, yeah, and we've been, trying to dissect the FAQs because there are many that ask similar questions but in different ways. And so you try and think through how HUD is interpreting the new RESPA proposed rule. This is a final rule that's due to be implemented January 1st. Some lenders may be bringing it out early. But as we read this, and actually for those of you who want a reference point, it's a frequently asked question on mine it comes out on page 5. It's number 17 under the category of the GFE in general. And the question is, if a loan is locked by a broker with a borrower, but then that broker then proceeds to float the rate, which they may do. They may not lock the rate at that moment with the borrower for various reasons, and we won't talk about that part. So in that general question, do the tolerances apply? Well, FHA goes on to answer and says, if the lender accepts the good faith estimate issued by a mortgage broker, the lender is subject to the loan terms and settlement charges. And so that sentence right there throws up a very big alarm bell that, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So I'm accepting all those fees. So if the broker's inaccurately disclosed, I'm responsible for redisclosure. And then there are many FAQs that go on about the whole timing thing. And, so if when a mortgage broker takes a loan application, their 3-day clock starts ticking. And then for a wholesale company that the broker may sell the loan to or send the loan to be looked at on the day that wholesaler receives the application, that's their day for when the 3-day clock starts ticking. So consumers, look out. If you think you're getting a lot of paper from a bunch of different people, it's going to get better.
Yeah, there is. But one of the things, Alice, that we should dive into there is the brokers are definitely, they're bringing a certain level of increased risk and liability to the lender based on their processes.
Well, yeah. So now, as a wholesaler, how do I handle that? There are great mortgage brokers out there, by the way.
Absolutely.
Companies that do great loan applications. And if you're an organization that has an accurate good faith estimate up front and it's not changing, then you're fine. If you're not doing a lot of quote with the borrower, float with an investor, and lock at a later rate, then there isn't risk or as much risk, for the investors. But as an investor now, or wholesaler, whatever term you want to use, I now am buying that liability.
Yeah. And I think that is going to have some more sobering effects on an already segment of our industry, specifically the TPO, third-party originated wholesale business. You have to use all these terms
right.
the various interpretations of that. Our lexicon needs to be better defined. But anything that's originated by a broker, an independent loan originator, that is being sent to a mortgage banker to be funded, there is certainly already enough things out there, and from a regulatory standpoint, that would cause many wholesalers to go, man, I got to rethink this business model.
Yeah, and this is all, it's always been out there as a wholesaler that I essentially am, somewhat buying the compliance issues, but this is very specific that all the way at the point of application, it used to be I had the compliance issue from the time the loan came to my front door.
That's right.
And this starts to kind of imply that, no, wait a minute, now I really am being responsible for the compliance at the time the broker's sitting with the borrower. That's a tough place. I'm not there, if I'm
well,
an investor.
Well, and I think, to the point that we said on our program before, our pre-program discussion with the three of us were having, I think there's many outstanding, extremely conscientious originators out there. Scott Sanderson isn't on the call today, so we can talk about him behind his back on this. But he is probably one of the most responsible guys. He is just goes all out to make sure his T's are crossed, his I's are dotted. And it represents the vast majority of that independent originator out there, the mortgage broker, that does everything they can to do it right. But they cannot deny that the fact that the government is putting more of an onus on the lender to have greater risk on anything that's been miscommunicated or however you want to characterize it, it's going to come back to the lender, Alice. And you just wonder if this isn't just going to continue to dampen the enthusiasm and continue to contract the whole wholesale broker TPO channel.
Well, and I'm an operations person that always likes to try to think of what are the solutions. What are the ways? Okay, I've got this challenge in terms of we want to keep sales running. There are good brokers that we deal with. How can I solve for that going forward? And so operationally, I'm going to look to technology to help me track this, help me identify right away brokers. Does this mean you now have to get applications into your wholesalers real fast? Because if you do a good faith estimate that is inaccurate and you don't find that out until day 5 or 6 of that loan application, you now have potentially a loan that no lender is going to buy because it's out of compliance.
Yeah, that's such an important point here. Now, I just want to go into one thing that we do. As a consulting firm, one of the services we provide is legal expert witness work. I testify on a lot of class action lawsuits typically on behalf of the lender that is being is the plaintiff in most of the case. And in most of the cases, every one of the lawsuits that I have done recently all have been in this very area. And that's based on the old rules and the old guidelines before this is coming up and becoming more of a risk to the lender. And in every case, the mortgage banker, the independent mortgage banker that funded the loan, has blown up and gone away. They filed bankruptcy, closed their doors. Somehow they ceased to exist. So the end investor that acquired that loan, the large financial institution, is the one that ends up holding that risk. And is there any wonder that more and more of the wholesalers out there, the investors that are buying these loans, the Wells Fargos, the B of A's, the Citi's, and Citi has really cut back on their TPO business and buying loans from TPO for those in the TPO business, but mm-hmm. others are following suit, Alice and Joe. And I want your feedback on this because I think it is so important that brokers rise up independent originators rise up and have their voice be heard. They need, as we said in the earlier segment, they've got to do it intelligently. They've got to do it based on facts. But they need to get their voices heard, because if they're not, these things are going to be becoming a reality as of, well, I guess it doesn't come reality on Christmas Eve, but the comment period ends, and based on the momentum that's there, it seems very probable that we will see these become adopted final rules and effective early in 2010. And then we have a new world out there that, quite frankly, could jeopardize the whole TPO channel.
Well, and just to clarify, David, I think one of the things there is to keep in mind, this particular aspect of RESPA is already done and is effective January 1st. The one that I think you're also referencing in there is the proposed rule comment period that's out there for the elimination of the yield spread. So that's the one we have the bigger window. So just to clarify, because like you said, there's multiple piling on going on in our industry right now, but this good faith estimate issue is a given, and I don't want people to be in the same boat they were with MDIA, where they didn't think it was a big deal, but then you start reading the fine print and you go, wow, holy cow, I better get looking at this today.
Go ahead.
Dave, I was just going to say, you know, all this makes it harder and harder and harder for that channel to function, but the positive to that is that those that are very good are going to be the ones that can work within the changes and can implement these things and can do it right.
Boy,
I just see that there's a great opportunity for the good ones to be left out there with many, many fewer competitors to in the marketplace.
Joe, that is such a good point, and I'm so glad you interject that. I think the motive for me bringing that up is to, number one, tell people on that which you can make in comment on, and thank you, Alice, for clarifying that, but that which you can make comment on, make comment, number one. Number two is realize this is just going to improve the opportunity for you to do business if you're the one of the ones doing it right. And, Joe, that is such a good point. And there's been a statement that I write a lot of articles, as many of you know, that follow what we're doing out there, and in the industry, we were writing a lot of articles, and there's this quote that I'm saying and putting out in every one of the articles: more money, and here's the quote, more money will be made in the next 5 years by the few that survive than by the masses that participated in the last business cycle. The reason the point is those that are doing it right can do a phenomenal job in grabbing huge market share, Joe, and making inordinate amounts of money, which is a good thing.
That is good.
So we're looking forward to, we see the positive out of this. We just want to make sure everyone is alerted to it, that they're not going, why didn't someone tell me? You should dial into Lincoln on Lending. Let's take a quick break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. This is Dave Licken, Licken and Lending. Alice, there's a couple other things we want to touch on briefly. We don't have a lot of time, and then I want to come back and talk about free markets, Joe. I want to talk about, as we're coming back to this, a lot of people are writing in and saying, man, it seems like the government's getting deeper and deeper into things. We're getting into a quandary that I'm sure we want. But Alice, before we go there, let's talk about this. That broker lender is not permitted to charge a discount if a yield spread premium is being disclosed or earned. Would you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, it's just, you know, again, one in the frequently asked questions under RESPA. You know, this is there have been lenders up until now that have said, if you're charging as a mortgage broker a discount point to the borrower, or if the seller's paying it, then is the broker or permitted to earn a positive yield on that loan? And some companies already have said, no, that we don't accept that policy. But there wasn't anything specifically in a regulation. Well, now we've got it. Within this RESPA piece and clarified within the frequently asked questions is that the broker lender, and I say broker lender because the lender's got to watch out for this, right, that you're not charging a discount point when there is a credit or a payment to the broker for yield spread premium. This GFE has a lot of nuances on calculations that are not intuitive or similar to what we've been doing, and it's going to be a curve for people to get used to.
A curve is a good way to that's being thrown at many, and I hate to say it, it's not really a curve. It's actually getting some things clarified. This is stuff that should have been, that again, the good lenders and the vast majority of people that were sensitive to these issues were already taken care of and observing without it being officially set as policy, but now it is being set as policy. Before we go back to a couple other things, we've got to get to some of these things that you wrote me, Alice, what happens if GFE is approved, some of the responses that you have, and there's some humorous things here, folks, you got to listen to. Alice, let's cover some of those. What happens if the GFE is not provided to a borrower? That's one of the questions that are coming in.
Well, I just think it was funny. You read the FAQs and you start to think, wow, they've got to put some really obvious questions on here. And it says, so like you said, what if a GFE is not provided to the borrower? Hello, that's the regulation. That's what you're supposed to be doing. What part of must don't you understand it? But HUD has to be very politically correct. Well, if you don't provide the borrower, you're in violation of section such and such. So, anyway.
Yeah, but what's amazing to us, there's a number, again, not the Joe, not the Scott Sandersons of the world, they've been doing it right all along, but there has been a number of people that go, I don't ever understand that GFE, I don't even do it, I put it on the lender. Well, guess what, folks, that's out there, and I sometimes wonder if that's where the feds actually, or the HUD actually put this in there, and it's almost a tongue-in-cheek, but unfortunately, can understand, based on some of the people we've talked to, why that's necessary. Here's another question. If the GFE is not provided by a broker within 3 days, must the lender issue its own GFE?
Well, the answer is going to be sure. Yeah, you can issue a new GFE, but the lender's 3 days didn't start till they got the application. So go back to what we just said. Go back to rule number one, that as a broker, you can't count on the lender to issue your GFE if you didn't get it out within 3 days. You're in violation of the act, for those of you who took the application. Right, it's just funny. Keep going back to the same thing.
Keep back to the same thing. Well, here's the favorite one. And now this is Alice wrote us a pre-show talking points here, and I got to quote this one. This is one of her favorite ones. Is the question number three, there is not enough lines on the GFE or on the HUD one to show all of the charges that that are appropriate for some of the categories. Should these charges be listed?
My answer to that is, if there aren't enough lines, you have too many charges. And could you please maybe pick another line of work? Because
And that kind of underscores the point here. I mean, it's a little humorous at the end of the program, and maybe that's where we should put it. We've got just 7 minutes to go here. I want to turn this back into a general discussion, and I want to go back, but that is just hilarious. You start looking at some of the FAQs, folks. Get in there. Get involved. We need to have some of this. You need to go into this intelligently, formed what's going on. Again, if you're looking at what's happening out there and getting concerned and going, is there anyone that's representing or can bring this, digesting us? Well, we are at Ligon and Lending. We want that. Joe, one comment that came in is that what has happened to the free market of the mortgage industry? It just seems like the federal government is getting more and more involved. Any comments to those free market those of us, and I'm one of them, wants to have a free market economy.
I am also, Dave, but in this case, I have to believe that in the spirit of continued improvement in the economy and maintaining low mortgage rates, it's a necessity.
Yeah.
Without it, I think we have far fewer buyers. We've seen what happened to mortgage-backed securities issued that did not have the government guarantee. So in order to continue this improvement, and I don't know when it would ever stop, but certainly for now, We need that backstop.
We need it, yeah. I'm so glad to hear you say that. I made that same response. Dave Asman on a recent Fox broadcast that I did asked me the question, Dave, do we really need the federal government involved in all this? Is it necessary for them to be there? And I made that same response. You know what? I think the problem is so significant right now that there needs to be some level of leadership brought into it. Not all that everything that's being proposed is all that exciting to me, but quite frankly, there is a lot out there. So, yes, we probably do. And for those of us that are really wanting to see the free market survive, there's certainly enough challenges out there. And we'd love to have your thoughts. Email us, please. Email us, Dave Licken at MBS. Or mortgagebankingsolutions.com is the best way to remember it. Again, D as in David, Licken, L-Y-K-K-E-N, mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Send it in. Also, you can Twitter your comments into us at David Licken, all spelled, all run together on Twitter. I'll look forward to getting your comments that way. We welcome your feedback. Again, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the program. Joe and Scott. Or Scott's not here, but we thank him for always his participation. Joe, thank you so much for being a part of it. Alice, always just love how you just digest all these issues. Both of you, thank you so much for being a part of what we're doing. We appreciate it. Again, pass this around. Get this program out to the industry. We're here to bring you the information necessary, and we're thrilled to be a part of your future. There is an exciting future in the mortgage banking industry. Stay tuned. We look forward to hearing or talking to you next week.
A weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.